Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team and a caregiver of a patient with TSC on the current and emerging management strategies for TSC-associated seizures. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Jazz Pharmaceuticals. In this podcast, an epilepsy specialist and a pediatric neurologist evaluate the potential for approved and emerging treatments with anti-seizure properties to prevent or delay the onset of seizures in patients with TSC.
Hello, my name is Katarzyna Kotulska. I'm the professor and head of the Department of Neurology and Epileptology at the Children's Memorial Health Institute in Warsaw, Poland. And today I'm joined by Professor James Willis, the Professor and Chief of Pediatric Neurology at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis. And we'll be discussing in this section the potential for preventing or delaying the onset of seizures in patients with tuberous sclerosis. As you know, there are several trials to prevent or delay the onset of seizures in TSC. One of them, the EPISTOP trial, which was the European trial using vigabatrin to delay the onset of seizures, has already published its result, but there are some others. What is the goal for the preventive strategy in tuberous sclerosis in the genetic disorder that is already there when we start any treatment?
Yeah, I think, you know, tuberous sclerosis was unique as a disease in that as we understood the basic kind of genetics, the underlying pathology of what, drove the disease, and as animal models were developed, one of the things that I guess we realized was that there was such a high prevalence of these children that if they have the disease, they're going to have epilepsy. And so that led to the, I guess, maybe logical conclusion of, gosh, many of these children, then if we know that it's the vast majority are going to have epilepsy, we understand kind of what's, you know, the genetic change causes in the brain. Can we do anything if we can identify them even before they start with their first seizures, and which is in the past when we would see them, if we can identify them at birth from either their heart abnormalities, from skin lesions, from other manifestations, is there any role for medicine to, you know, prevent totally? In an ideal world, we love our medicine to say, gosh, no seizures, cognitively normal, you know, developmentally normal, no behavior problems. That would be the ideal. And the animal models suggested that we could at least do prevention for the seizure. So I think that's what led, you know, to the human trials, which have been, you know, exciting. We really don't have this in other areas of epilepsy we deal with. So this has really been an exciting and kind of innovative area to say, can we do something to minimize the impact of just these ongoing seizures and the effect they have on the child and the family? And if we can, does that improve their development? Because we know these first couple of years of life for the infant are just critical for their cognitive development, for speech, and for not developing some of the behavioral abnormalities. The more normal we can make that. So I think that's what led to the trials. I know the center you're at and yourself, you were kind of critical person involved in these trials. Maybe you can give us, you know, your sense of kind of the trials and where you think we've come with vigabatrin, which was the first agent, and where things are headed.
So vigabatrin was the very first one to be tried in both EPISTOP trial and in the PREVENT trial that is still ongoing in the U.S. And in both of these trial, the primary endpoint was the time to first seizure. So it's it reflects the idea that with the later onset of seizures, the neuropsychiatric outcome would be better. But in fact, in the EPISTOP trial, in the results that we had at the age of 2 years, we didn't show that. Because the overall outcome, the overall neuropsychiatric outcome in this cohort was better than in any other outcome. So the surveillance with EEG And the early recognition of seizures was much more important than the difference by 2 weeks in the introducing the treatment before or after the onset of clinical seizures. I think we will learn much more from the trials that are focused on the neuropsychiatric outcome in the TSC infants, like the Step 2 trial or the VIRAP trial that is currently conducted in Europe, because they focus on the neuropsychiatric features of TSC, and they use enter inhibitor, so the design is completely different.
So we discussed a little bit the prevention trials associated with vigabatrin. The mTOR inhibitor sirolimus has also, you know, prompted people's interest as well. And those trials are just starting. The vigabatrin trials were kind of the first ones, if you will, to be done. So there's a couple of those involving infants. Some starting is literally at the birth or shortly after birth. There's two of those with sirolimus that are looking at kind of prevention of seizures, improved cognitive outcome when the child's, as they get, through the first year of life. There's a comparative trial that will look at sirolimus compared to vigabatrin that will start with infants. So as they get kind of 4 weeks old or so, and then we'll look at, how do those folks do with seizures as they get older, even the burden of tuberous sclerosis, as well as far as central nervous system tumors. And we'll know those down the road. All of those are going to be a couple of years before we have final data on that, but those are exciting studies to complement the ones we previously had on vigabatrin. So we've, now had a fair experience, just as you have and many our other colleagues, with using vigabatrin, in infancy as a preventative. I think we've kind of got the maximum, if you will. We understand that the best we're going to get out of doing that, and we see the mTOR inhibitor as the next logical step to say, can we add to that, if you will, or can we do better? I have to admit, in our center, we identify kids at birth since the beginning of this year, end of last year. We've been using both agents together. We feel like we can safely monitor them and do that. And again, we discuss with families the risk. These families understand that, my child, has very high chances of developing epilepsy, very high chances of having cognitive and behavioral problems. And it's been interesting to monitor the EEGs and see them, continue to be good. Obviously, we'll see if that combination gets to the holy grail of improved development as they get, out 2-3 years. So we all got a little while to wait on that data. But I think for a lot of these families, it's very encouraging. And I think it's nice for them to know that, we're trying to tackle this, kind of at the front end rather than waiting till they develop a problem and then saying, oh, now let's see what we can do.
The challenge is to diagnose the infants early enough to have the time window for the preventive strategies.
Our standard anti-seizure medications, and even those that have been, kind of tested specifically in tuberous sclerosis, historically have been aimed at, targeting seizures once they're already present, not as a prevention. So we don't have as good a data for some of those as to, will they work for that. We can test those obviously in the animal model and say, does it show any inclination of working there? But I think it's going to be a while before we know if our standard medications and even our recent ones that have been approved in treating tuberous sclerosis, like cannabidiol, will they have a role in that or not? Currently, the current studies will have to finish first, so it may take a while before we get to that, I guess.
Thank you very much for this interesting discussion on the preventive care in tuberous sclerosis. I think we'll see much more in the future with the published results of the ongoing studies. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget, there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.